ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It's bin night, and you wheel the rubbish bins out to the gutter, but past that, do you ever think about where your rubbish ends up? Around the country, it's getting more expensive to get rid of rubbish, and there are fewer places to dump it. It's a warning the waste industry has voiced for a decade, but for many councils, the reality is about to hit. On the Gold Coast, rubbish tips will be exhausted within a decade, and it's a similar story across Australia. So when the landfill runs out, what do we do with all our waste? And how do we reduce the amount we produce in the first place? Rick Ralph is CEO of the Australian Resources Recovery Council and is with me now. Rick, welcome to Life Matters.
G'day, Dagan. How are you, mate?
I'm good. Great to have you with me. A lot of rubbish tips are running out of space, not just on the Goldie. Can you give us a sense of how big this problem is and how much space we have left?
Well, if you have a look at Australia has massive void space through mining and other bits and pieces, and at the requirement of a rehabilitation after you take it out of the ground, you've got to rehabilitate that back to its natural sort of landform. Unfortunately, with landfills, you've got what we classify in the industry a dry landfill, and you've got other landfills that take wet waste. So, for all intents and purposes, your household waste and your food waste and your industrial waste. And it's that waste stream which has actually put all the pressure on the landfills, and that's the shortage. In terms of dry waste, like building and construction waste, that, because it's what we classify mostly inert, that can be recycled quite easily. Good volumes of, you know, gravel and timber and other things taken out. The shortage is in terms of the wet waste of households and in commercial and industrial.
Why is wet waste such a toxic problem?
Well, what it is, you have leachate, and as it breaks down, the organic matter creates CO2, creates methane, and unless you capture that methane and then you put it to a beneficial use like landfill gas and your power engines, etc., that does have a potent impact on the climate. Our problem with landfills is historically a landfill is about a public health and amenity issue. That's where it all came from about 200 years ago in London. And as a result of that, over the years, councils and have always been responsible for waste have found, you know, voids. We've had it used to go into gullies. It used to go into all sorts of crazy places. In fact, most parks in most urban areas are actually old landfills, believe it or not, that have evolved over the time. Unfortunately, what's happened, there's been a shortage. Population's increased. These landfills need to be sophisticated. They're really purpose-built, so they have liners to stop any permeation of the material into the groundwater supply and a whole process. And unfortunately, they're very sophisticated assets. And unfortunately, our political masters, our elected representatives, have had this myth that zero waste and recycling is going to be the silver it's the solution. And unfortunately, they've had taken their eye off the ball and not allowed these facilities to continue to develop. And as such, we're now heading for an absolute showdown in terms of landfill capacity.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Rick Ralph, who's the CEO of the Australian Resources Recovery Council, talking about the fact that our landfills are nearly landfull. What are we going to do with the rubbish? One text says, I make sure to separate plastic, glass and paper, plus my food scraps to feed two laying hens who give me two beautiful eggs a day. They're lovely to watch with great personalities as well. I love chooks too. Another text though, Rick, Cody says, burn the rubbish and produce electricity. Well, that is something that Gold Coast Council has a plan to do. Can you tell me about this idea of waste to energy?
What happens is, look, landfills, waste to energy is a solution. It is not the solution. And whenever we talk waste to energy, we talk residuals of waste. So imagine your recycling bin or your garbage bin, essentially break it down into three chunks. You've got your yellow top materials about a third, you've got organic matter about a third, which could be food waste and green waste, and then you've got this other stuff that you're not quite sure what you can do with. It's that other material that the industry would take the energy or the calorific value in. It could be a coat hanger, it could be an old shoe, it could be a leather. It just materials that have got inherently an energy value. You put that into a high-end temperature environment. That high-end temperature environment then creates the heat, which you then can create the steam for boilers, and then you put that steam from boilers to turbines to put electricity into the grid. It's as simple as that. All sophisticated economies globally have waste to energy, but it's important. It's not mass burn, as in just forget recycling, forget organics. It's the residuals of waste that can't go anywhere else that actually the energy and the calorific value is recovered from. You saw the Olympic Games. Your listeners would be interested to know that all the swimmers actually swam past a waste-to-energy facility right next door to the scene. You've got Copenhagen. We all know about Princess Mary, et cetera. She looks out of the palace and down the road. There's a waste-to-energy facility with a ski field on it. Snow in winter, green field in summer. You've got the London has a waste to energy on the river. So these facilities are very sophisticated, but they handle material streams that would otherwise have to go to landfill that have no other purpose other than that.
Rick, it's so interesting hearing you talk about this as an environmental solution, because I think when we're thinking about burning things to make energy, we think about coal, and it's something that we associate with greenhouse gas emission. What kind of response do you get from people when you start talking about basically burning waste to generate electricity?
The emission profiles have changed over the years, and everyone thinks back into the bad old days when, you know, the 40s and the 50s and the 60s when we had the incinerator in the back garden with the old Besser blocks. These facilities are highly sophisticated. The new ones that are coming online in Perth, they're monitored constantly, and the monitoring is online so the community and the public can actually see it. A lot of people wouldn't understand what they're looking at, but you could, the transparency of the emissions data, you can actually, the stuff that you see coming out of the stacks is actually steam. It's not emissions per se. It's not all this smoke and toxic stuff. So I think when people say to me about it, you know, no one questions about the validity of the need of it, but there needs to be the myths and the spin that goes around the negativity needs to be counteracted with fact. And science doesn't argue with fact. We as a waste management industry, we have strict environmental standards and guidelines, and those are constantly managed by our environmental regulators. And frankly, you know, I personally have no issues whatsoever living right next door to one of these facilities, because you won't even know it's operating. You won't even know it's there. And that's how sophisticated they are.
So you mentioned a couple overseas in France and in Denmark. There's not many of these plants in Australia, but the one on the Gold Coast is going to cost $1.6 billion if that goes ahead. How does that compare to the cost of landfill?
Probably over the life cycle of the facility, it probably comparable. Might be more. It's probably more expensive. But what you've got to understand is the energy you're going to be able to capture out of that facility and put it into the community grid as a baseline, as what we call firmed power. Landfill gas at the moment, the way landfills work is we have a requirement to manage fugitive emissions, and that's the methane that comes out of it. So we have these pipes and we suck the gas out that is created by the activity of the landfill, and that's the smoke, you know, but people more often think, oh, that's a smell. That gas then goes to a turbine and then we create electricity. But flip it to a waste-to-energy facility, it's a constant. Once you turn the thing on, it keeps going. And then it also is capturing all of the energy of all of the material that would normally just be sitting in a landfill and take 30 or 40 years to degrade. I think also the reality in the whole process is we need landfills regardless of any technology. We need greater uptake of recycling in Australia for manufacturing, for our baseload sovereign capability. That is an absolute given. We have to have that. But if we don't have cheap energy to actually run it or energy that makes it cost effective, then you can't have that. So whereas waste to energy can provide the energy needed through power to power our manufacturing sector as well. So it's a win-win all around. So when you look at $1.6 billion, a lot of money, but look how much it actually will generate in terms of value add and other bits and pieces. These assets are built for 30, 40 years, so you've got to be realistic and value that $1.6 over the time. we as an industry have been saying for years that Australia is headed for a real catastrophic fall off the cliff in terms of where are we going to put our waste. And unfortunately, the reality is it's here now. See, on the eastern seaboard of Australia, probably Sydney's got 5 years, I think 5 or 7 years. And ironically, they've just published their first critical infrastructure and waste management infrastructure plan in 2025. Can you believe it? Mm-hmm. Queensland still doesn't have it. So, you know, it's a complex, but it's not the solution. It is just a solution.
Here on ABC Radio National, you're listening to Life Matters. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Rick Ralph, who's the CEO of the Australian Resources Recovery Council. We're talking about waste, if you haven't been able to pick that up. One says, as I'm listening, I've just popped into my freezer chicken bones from last night's roast with onion peel, carrot peel, leek ends and roots. I have a plastic bag in the freezer especially for that purpose. Once it's full, I make a delicious chicken stock, then make risotto or soup or whatever. It can then be frozen again. Another text says, since our council introduced the FOGO system, that's food organics and garden organics, we have FOGO collection weekly, landfill rubbish collection fortnightly, and recycling fortnightly. I have one garbage bag for landfill every 2 weeks now. None of it's wet. It's great. Well, also with me is Professor John Thwaites. He's the chair of the Monash Sustainable Development Institute and former chair of the federal government's Circular Economy Ministerial Advisory Group. John, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks, Tegan.
So we're talking a lot about what we do with our waste with Rick here, which is great. We're always going to produce some of it, but your focus really is on how we prevent waste being generated in the first place.
That's exactly right, because we do waste an enormous amount, and we're talking about landfill, about 28 million tonnes of waste goes to landfill. And really, we can reduce that amount of waste. And that not only has a benefit in terms of not needing landfill, but it also reduces pollution, because a lot of this waste does cause pollution, and it reduces carbon emissions. So it's a real win-win if we go further back up the value chain and reduce the amount of stuff that we use in the first place.
What are some practical ways that you see working to do that?
Well, the building sector is a good example. So it's the biggest single part of the landfill waste, and yet it keeps rising. And we know that there are many things you can do in the construction industry to reduce waste. I mean, one of the things to do, for example, is instead of knocking down buildings and putting all that material into landfill, is to refurbish buildings, reuse them. And we're seeing now office towers, instead of simply abandoning the core of the building, we're seeing examples where developers are now using the core of the building and refurbishing it rather than knocking it down and putting all that into waste. Or in mining, for example, we're seeing the tailings, which was waste, now being used as a resource to get critical minerals. And in food, I think obviously we're talking about wet waste and food. There's a lot of waste from agriculture that currently might go to landfill, which could be turned into valuable products such as feed for animals. So it's a matter of looking at every sector of the economy and turning it into a circular economy where we reuse things, where we design out waste in the first place, and that way we've got less of a problem.
John, I think I can hear what you're saying about like industry level stuff. That's where we're going to get the biggest return on investment if we're doing things differently at a structural level, because the scale is really big. What I'm seeing on the text line though is a real frustration in at the consumer level, how difficult it is to choose a low-waste lifestyle if that's what you want to do. Tina's asking, why can food and other containers legally be made if they can't be recycled? Another says, the more I try to choose low-waste, the more manufacturers and retailers package items into plastic that can't be recycled. Another says, we need stronger extended producer responsibility laws to help us not develop waste in the first place. How much power does a consumer have here?
Well, I agree absolutely with everything that your listeners have said, and that was the recommendations that our Ministerial Advisory Group made. It's why we need a National Circular Economy Act, which gives the Australian government the power to set standards for things like these plastic containers so that you don't get things that can't be recycled, and you don't get products that are so disposable that you get products that are repairable and durable. They've got that in Europe, and it means that we don't get frustrated, as most households do, with the short life of products and the fact that we can't do anything but simply put them in the bin.
How circular is Australia's economy today?
Well, unfortunately, we're really pretty much at the bottom of the pack there. Our circularity rate, which is the proportion of recycled or non-virgin material compared to all the material that we use, is about 4.6%. Only 4.6%, that means 95% of what we use is new virgin product. Now, that compares to about 11% in Europe. And one of the recommendations we've made is that we could double that circularity rate by 2035, which would reduce waste, but it would also bring down carbon emissions and provide a lot of business opportunities.
Rick, I can hear you vocalising with what John's saying there. What's your view on and how we could make our economy more circular?
I think, absolutely, industry's been calling for mandated product stewardship. So if you're going to produce a material, you actually have a responsibility to make sure that material is either recovered or recycled. Unfortunately, in Australia, we have product stewardship schemes which are voluntary, and frankly, they're an abysmal failure. We've been calling for mandated product stewardship, which would help the consumer then to actually understand it. There'd be funds available through supply channels to actually have the recycling. I think a really strong point to make is, and I agree with what was been said about our performance is very, very low. We're generating more waste per capita today than we were in 2016, at 2.4 tonnes per person, where our recycling levels have flatlined at about 60% in real terms. So unless we get serious about genuinely look at how our habits, unless we change our habits and start being very serious about what we actually do, all the new, the immigration limits are going through the roof, and that's a different debate. But just think about every single person generating 2.4 tonnes of waste per year. These volumes are increasing, so there has to be a fundamental shift in government policy. Elected representatives have to be required to actually put a genuine thought processes into long-term policy, not this short-term three-year sugar hit and how am I going to get elected. And that's where it's fallen short. Now, I blame front and centre. I've been in the game now 45 years, and I blame front and centre the short-sightedness of all political parties to actually genuinely look at waste as an essential service, a huge economic opportunity and powerhouse. But more importantly, it's an environmental and health issue that has to be tackled head on. So I would agree with the circular economy arguments, but there needs to be a more holistic and macro view of the world, not just simply sugar hit policies.
So, John, you chaired the Circular Economy Ministerial Advisory Group. It handed down its final report to Federal Environment Minister Tanya Plibersek December last year, nearly a year ago now. What were some of your key recommendations?
The first recommendation we made is that we did need a national circular economy strategy or framework, and that has been adopted now. So there's now a commitment from the government that to a framework and to double circularity by 2035 and to shrink our material footprint. Another key recommendation we made is that the Commonwealth Government in its procurement should embed circular economy principles. That is, when they're investing in roads or buildings, they should require the people doing the construction to use circular economy principles, use less material and recycle. And that's been adopted, which is a good thing, although we now want to see that adopted right across all the states. But the other recommendations that we made are yet to be adopted, and they go to this point we're talking about, the need for mandatory product stewardship so that goods are going to be looked after for their whole journey and not just simply dumped, and also standards for products so that things like these packaging, the plastic packaging or the the appliances are going to not be dumped into landfill, but are going to be either recycled or reused.
Rick, coming back to this idea of the waste-to-energy plants, if that is one of the solutions here, what kind of timeline do you think we're looking at?
If you get the planning, that's why it's such an urgent issue now. You're not going to build them under 5 to 7 years minimum. The planning, the regulatory, the structure, you're competing with all the other infrastructure, et cetera. And that's why we're saying there is a crisis here. You know, at the 2032, all the talk in Queensland about 2032 Olympic Games, I don't think I've heard the word waste mentioned once. I've never heard the language around using recycled content, is what John said. You know, we've argued, well, advocated for years, have government mandate on all principal contractors to report how much recycled content generated from Australian recycling businesses, not just recycling content that can be dumped in from international markets. But there's no conversation happening. So this crisis is here front and centre now, because we're talking about something today that is going to be 7 years out. And the population is only going north. So you can't build these things quickly. You've just got to crack on. And I applaud Tom Tate for being the only one of the few mayors that actually is talking common sense here. You know, many mayors shy away from the issue. They always say their road rates and rubbish. But as soon as they want to do something, oh, no, we can't put it in my backyard. Well, good on you, Tom. I think he's on the money, but it's going to be 5 to 7 years.
Rick, John, thank you both so much for joining me today. Rick Ralph is CEO of the Australian Resources Recovery Council, and Professor John Thwaites is the chair of the Monash Sustainable Development Institute and former chair of the federal government's Circular Economy Ministerial Advisory Group.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.